Welcome back with the last half hour of Issues Etc. Today, since it is December, we're signing off a half hour earlier than normal. That'll just last through December. Then we'll get back to some normal times. Our call-in numbers as we head into this conversation with Greg Kokel on faith and truth, truth and faith, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You can also email us here in the studio. It's Monday, December the 4th. Issues, ETC at KFUO.org, Issues, ETC at KFUO.org. The relationship between truth and faith, between knowledge and belief, seems to be stretched of late. In fact, the two, in many people's minds, can be easily divorced, live in separate homes, and have nothing to do with one another. If something is true, does that mean it's a fact? Can we know if something is true? If I hold to a belief, am I automatically asserting that what I believe is true and that any opposite proposition is false? You know, you ask the average kid in school, college student, maybe even man on the street, that series of questions, and they'll say, look, I believe a lot of things. That doesn't necessarily mean they're true, at least not true for everybody. We've got a very fluid definition of truth at work, don't we? We'll try and sort some of this out in this half hour. Greg Kokel is president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, and he's author of a series on belief and faith in the Solid Ground newsletter. Greg, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Good to talk to you.
Your basic concern comes, there are a lot of details here, but your basic concern begins with what is really a good impulse on the part of Christians and of the church in general, and that is to set our minds on being about the mission of the church and being acutely aware of the culture into which we speak the message of truth that we have, that message of Jesus Christ crucified and risen for sinners.
Right.
What's the danger of having one finger on the pulse of the culture while we do this?
Well, the danger is always that you seek so hard to contextualize the gospel in terms that the current culture could understand that you actually overstep the bounds, and instead of changing your method, you start changing your message to one. It's not just that the culture can understand, but it is palatable to the culture. That is, that you begin to adopt the culture's way of looking at things. For example, it seems very clear that Jesus was not a pluralist or an inclusivist of any kind. He thought he was the only way of salvation. The first commandment is to love your Lord your God with your whole heart, mind, soul, and strength. Well, essentially, that there is only one God, and you shouldn't have any gods, other gods before you. So that makes it clear that even from the Jewish perspective, pluralism is not legitimate. But then there are Christians who, living in a pluralistic culture, will want to say, oh, yeah, well, Jesus is my Savior, but that's just my own personal belief, and if you want him to be your Savior, fine, but he doesn't have to be because there are other legitimate ways to God as well. And so here's a case where the Christian is trying to have his cake and eat it too. He's trying to appeal to the culture with the Christian message, but then he wants to modify the Christian message to make it more palatable, and in the process takes the guts out of it. The cross is a stumbling block, Todd, as you know, and if we make Jesus into ice cream, we have no message left at all.
Okay, I'm thinking of an example. Tell me if this hits the center of the mark of what you're diagnosing as a problem. Recently, the Episcopal Church USA consecrated their first female presiding bishop, Catherine Jeffords Shorey. She was interviewed in a press conference shortly after her elevation. And she was talking about the exclusive claims of the Christian church. And she said something to the effect of, well, while from our Christian perspective, we believe that Jesus is the way of salvation, it would be judgmental of us to impose that belief on other people's other cultures.
Uh-huh.
And it is more or less intolerant to assert that that is true for everyone at every time, in every place.
Well, that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, Todd. And I guess, you know, does she think that the rule of tolerance and not being judgmental, at least the way she understands that rule, is something that is just applied to her specific group of people, or could other Christians with a different point of view be judgmental and that's not a problem? Notice the subtle way of not wanting to universalize the gospel message, but then wanting to universalize her rule about judging and tolerance. And this is where, you know, you have folks like that speaking out of both sides of their mouth. The real question, Todd, is what did Jesus have in mind? Did Jesus think that he was only the Savior for those who believed he was? Or is he, in fact, the Savior of the world, as he claimed to be? To be honest with you, to say he's only the Savior for those that believe that he is seems like kind of nonsense to me. I don't even know what to make of that sentence. That's like saying that a thing is true if a person believes it. So it's true that Jesus is the Messiah for me because I believe it, but it's true for a Buddhist that Buddhism is true for him because he believes it. Well, isn't there a difference between belief and unbelief? Or rather, belief and make-believe? Isn't there a fantasy world? Couldn't people make mistakes in their beliefs? It seems to me certainly they could, and therefore there must be a difference between belief and fact. And we're trying to get in touch with the fact here and not just mush around in the area of belief.
Let's deal with some basic definitions. Knowledge. What is it?
Well, knowledge, you know, it's something that's batted around by philosophers a lot, but it's not really that hard to figure out. When you say you know something, you mean a couple of things are kind of packaged in there. First of all, if you say, I know that my car is gray, for example, that means you believe that it's gray. And if you say you know that it's gray, you believe that it's that way, you think that it's true that it's that way, and you have good reason to hold that view. You're not just guessing. You're not just plucking it out of thin air. You maybe went out and looked at it. So to say you know something, the way the philosophers put it, is called justified true belief. But it simply means that you believe a thing to be so, and the nature of the belief is that it's whatever it is that you're believing is true, and that's what beliefs are, Todd. Beliefs are holding that things are so. If I believe my car is gray, and it is, then my belief is true.
So
I believe it because I think it is true. And if I have reasons to believe it, then I could say I know that it's the case.
So it's nonsense for someone to say, as we often hear people say, I hold a belief, but I'm not necessarily saying it's true.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like the woman that you just quoted. What do we mean when we say we hold a belief about something? Generally, if I say I believe that I'm talking to you on the phone right now, Todd, which I do believe that, the nature of my belief is that it is so, that I'm actually doing what I believe I'm doing, and that if I'm not actually doing what I believe I'm doing, then my belief is not true, it's false. If I believe it, it means that it's true. So I don't know how somebody could say that they believe that Jesus is the Savior for the world, but they don't believe that he's the Savior. That really holds for all people. It's just for them. Now, maybe they in fact mean that only Jesus only saves is only meant to save Gentile Christians, and that's it. And that the message is for no one else, and everybody else has a different legitimate means, but they're going to have to demonstrate that God's happy with that. I'll tell you one thing, that was not the view of Jesus. And so somebody representing Jesus' view in that way seems to me is making a big mistake.
Can someone consistently, and that's the operative word here, can someone consistently be a Christian, actually be a Christian, not just claim to be a Christian, but be a Christian and deny the existence of absolute truth?
Well, what you mean by the term absolute truth is objective truth, which is my sense of what you're saying there.
Yes.
I do not think that's possible. And in my writing here in the last couple of Solid Grounds for Stand to Reason, in the article Truth is a Strange Sort of Fiction, I make this rather bold claim. And the claim is, if you really do not believe in objective truth, then you cannot be a Christian. And I don't mean at all, Todd, to be saying, I'm going to disqualify people, I'm kicking them out. What I mean is that there's something logically inconsistent with saying you're a Christian in the way that the New Testament uses that word, and also saying that you do not believe in objective truth. And here's the inconsistency. We kind of hinted at this a few moments ago. To say that you believe something is to say that you hold that it's so. In other words, that it's true. And you mean that it's true in the objective sense, the ordinary garden variety definition of the word true. I say that it is, and if it is, then it's true. And so that's what it means to believe something. Now, Christianity requires that we believe in Jesus as our Savior. Now, to believe that Jesus is the Savior, we have to hold that he is, as a matter of fact, or in other terms, as a matter of objective truth. And if you don't, as a matter of objective truth, believe that Jesus is the Messiah and put your faith in him, I don't know what it means to say you're putting your faith in him. It certainly isn't the same thing that Jesus had in mind. So if you reject objective truth, then I don't see how it's possible to be a Christian. If somebody really says they're a Christian and believes there is no truth, then in spite of all their sincerity, they're not Christian.
Okay, then what about this variation that probably is as popular as those who might say there is no objective truth? They would say, well, there are multiple truths. And perhaps they're simply bound to various cultures or times or epochs, but there are multiple truths.
Well, that is confused, to put it that way, just the way you put it. There certainly are multiple truths in the sense that there are a lot of particular things that can be true. It's true that there's a glass here next to me, and it's true that I'm talking on the phone. Those are multiple truths. But if what one means is that there are multiple truths with regards to the God and salvation question, and that these truths, and I'm using scare quotes around the words now, are tied to cultures, then we're not talking about truth at all, are we? We're not really talking about the way the world is. We are talking about beliefs people have, and beliefs that could be true or could be false. Now, if the Jews believe that Jesus is not the Messiah, and Christians believe that he is, and Jesus either is the Messiah or he's not the Messiah, there's no third alternative, then somebody's wrong here. Even though they have genuine beliefs, if Jesus is not the Messiah, then the Christians are wrong and the Jews are right. If, as a matter of fact, Jesus is the Messiah, then the Christians are right and the Jews are wrong. But under no circumstances, Todd, can they both be correct? And your way of stating the problem just a moment ago is a common way of stating it, but it's just another way of affirming the pluralist view, which I think ultimately does not take the concept of truth seriously.
Greg Kokel is our guest. We're talking about truth and faith. He's president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of a series on belief and faith in the Solid Ground newsletter. Our call-in numbers in the last 10 minutes of the program, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Also, our email address here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, in one of these articles you've written, you ask a trick question. It's also a very tricky question, and I do not want you in any way to be misunderstood when you ask or answer this question. So I'm going to give you the reins here for the last few minutes to ask your trick question of that person who would assert that they can reject objective truth and still be a Christian. What's the question? And then go about answering it as carefully as possible.
Yeah, it's the question is a trick question for the Christian, actually, because my question is simply, does faith save? Well, gosh, that seems pretty straightforward. The Bible wants us to have faith. If we don't have faith, then we can't be saved. And it's got to be the real McCoy. It can't just be kind of an intellectual acknowledgement, you know, an assent of certain things. We really have to genuinely lay hold of and give active trust in order to be saved. There you go. Okay, could faith? Yeah, faith does save. And so after people give me the affirmation, I invite them to this, just think of an illustration here. If you were a diabetic going into, I guess, insulin shock or diabetic coma, I guess it would have been, you definitely needed your insulin, and I had a vial here with a hypodermic, and I said it was insulin, would you trust me, would you exercise faith in me to inject you with this insulin to save your life? Now, I think if people actually trusted me, they would probably say yes. But my response is, if you did, you'd be dead. Because I'm not trustworthy. This little vial here does not have insulin. It has salt water. The point being, even though you exercised a childlike faith and total trust and threw yourself into my arms and depended upon me, since I couldn't deliver what I claimed I could deliver, you were still dead, even though you had tremendous faith. Now I ask the same question again. Does faith save? And we realize, no, it doesn't. It isn't faith that saves, because if it's just an act of trust that saves, then all kinds of people around the world who are exercising faith in the wrong thing, a Buddha or Krishna or Muhammad, then they're saved too. No, it's not enough to have active trust. That's necessary, but it's not sufficient. You also have to get certain facts right. You've got to put your trust in one who is actually, as a matter of objective truth, capable of saving. So if you put your faith in something that is not true, you can still be lost, even if it's a real, genuine, active faith, an active trust. Which the lesson here, Todd, is that when you come, when it comes to biblical Christianity, it's not just knowing the truth, and it's not just trusting. You have to be trusting in that which is true. The two have to go together. And therefore, if you are coming, if you find yourself in a Christian tradition, especially a more postmodern one, that says you are believing in Jesus, but you are not believing in truth, then your belief is not the kind of belief that can connect you with the real Jesus, and you are still lost. Which is why I say, if you don't believe in objective truth, then you can't be a Christian.
You have expressed on these airwaves and elsewhere in writing a deep concern about the emergent church movement.
Yeah.
And its particular brand, although it is a very varied movement, its particular brand of definition for
right.
truth. Put a cap on this, the concerns you've raised here so far, and then how it applies to the emergent church movement.
Yeah, I'm talking about the emerging culture in general here, which is largely postmodern, and this is a problem that they have in the area of truth. Well, if that view of truth begins to influence the church, it begins to undermine the significance of the gospel itself, and that's the conversation that we've had so far. The fact is, there is a large movement in the church that is toying with these ideas. Now, you use the phrase emergent church, and I just want to kind of pick at terms here because they're important. The emergent church is actually a proper noun that describes one faction or one grouping, and the larger emerging church, that would be smaller case e, which is an adjective. The emerging church is that church that's trying to reach the emerging generation. There is a smaller group that is called emergent, specifically Emergent Village, and the name that you probably most readily connect with that is Brian McLaren's. And there's other names, Tony Jones and Doug Padgett. Those three names are probably the most well-known. Those are not only trying to reach the emerging culture, but they are also, I think, flirting dangerously with postmodern philosophy as well. And those are the ones that I'm concerned with. There are many people in the emerging church that are very committed to what we would consider orthodoxy in understanding knowledge and truth and doctrine, but are still really aggressively going after the emerging culture. Dan Kimball over in Santa Cruz is an author that some of your listeners might recognize, who wrote the book The Emerging Church. I'm reading a book by him right now. It hasn't been out yet, but I'm getting an advanced look at it, called They Like Jesus But Not the Church. This guy, for my money, is right on the money. He's right there. Doctrinally and theologically and philosophically, but he wants to really, really reach this emerging culture, and so he's adapting culturally to reach out to these people. And I just think it's real important, Todd, for us to make this distinction between the broader emerging church, which includes a lot of people like Dan Kimball, maybe even most like Dan Kimball, missional to the new culture but still solid theologically, and these others like the emergent village crowd, that are, I think, dangerously close to adopting a postmodern view of truth, which, as I pointed out, simply eviscerates the gospel.
Steve in Toronto writes this, a question for you, Greg. He says, the real problem is not whether absolute truth exists, but the degree to which it is accessible to human reason, given the 2,000-year history of godly and pious people coming to radically different conclusions about the same texts. I now wonder if there is something about God and his revelation to us that is fundamentally opposed to what our modern mind sees as absolute truth. After all, Christ said he was the way, the truth, and the light, and that he presented his message to us in often maddeningly ambiguous parables. And I guess the basic question he's asking here is what he raised at the beginning. That truth exists, perhaps, would be beyond dispute. Our access to it, perhaps, should be called into question. What do you make of his way of threading the needle?
That actually is a postmodern move, and I think it's a genuine sentiment and a concern that the writer has offered you, and he's wondering, because this is what he's heard from his postmodern culture, this very thing. Okay, maybe the truth is out there, but we can't get at that. And so my question is, well, what was the point that God gave us the Bible at all? Why did Jesus say, I came to bear witness to the truth? Why did Jesus talk more about truth than he did about faith? I think the reason is because God expected that that it wasn't impossible for us to know the truth, that it was accessible if we spent some time examining it. And to point out that people have differed over the ages doesn't help us at all. I mean, people right now are differing on this issue. So since I differ from the writer on this particular point, am I justified in saying he couldn't be right either about this because we have a different point of view? There are always going to be different points of view. This is why it's so important, since Jesus cared about truth so much, and then by Jesus' witness and those he trained to follow after him, the apostles, by their witness, the collective witness, the scriptures were given to us to educate us in the truth, then it seems to me it's beholden upon us to give our best effort to figuring out what it says, instead of throwing our hands up in the air and saying, well, I guess God didn't want us to know it anyway.
Greg,
no, of course he wanted us to know it. That's why he gave it to us. But it doesn't always mean that it's easy. Some issues are easier than others. And the idea that Jesus is the only way of salvation with regards to biblical clarity can't be missed by even by the casual reader if he's being honest with the text.
All right.
Now,
well,
that raises other questions, but it's certainly this is very clear in the text.
Then 30 seconds. How would you respond to someone who says, I think of myself as a postmodern Christian?
Well, I'd want to know, what do you mean by that? The first Columbo question. If what they mean by that is that I hold, I believe in certain truths, but I'm not going to be super dogmatic or nasty about it because I know that we can be misled, well, I'm in that same boat. But if he's saying that we can't know truth at all, then I'm going to have to say, well, then you're not a Christian because Jesus demands that you believe that he is the Messiah, and that is a feature of truth, not just guessing.
You can receive Greg Kokel's free Solid Ground newsletter by calling 1-800-2-REASON, 1-800-2-REASON, and ask to receive Solid Ground, 1-800-2-REASON, or find out more about going to our website tonight, issuesetc.org. Click links, and you'll find a direct link to Greg Kokel and Stand to Reason. Greg, thanks for being our guest.
Always great to talk with you, Todd. Thank you.
Greg Kokel is president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. He's authored a series on belief and faith for the Solid Ground newsletter. Tune in again tomorrow at 3 Central for Issues, Etc. We're going to have Steve Beard of World Magazine reviewing the new movie that is at least being previewed and touted just about everywhere. It's called The Nativity Story. We'll see how it stacks up to the real nativity story, and we're going to review a very interesting interview with a former Lutheran pastor who is on his way to becoming an Orthodox priest. That's tomorrow on Issues, Etc. The foundation of truth is personal. Jesus is that foundation. When he says he is the way, the truth, and the life, he lays truth, all of its claims, especially the claims he has made about himself and what he has done for us sinners, at his feet. He claims to be the authenticator of it all. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.